Welcome, world, to Salon Radio, our new podcast structure. And we're very excited to be featuring another couple great women artists at this session. And I am Heidi Russell, founder of International Women Artists Salon. It's my pleasure to be here to be the host this show. And I'm here with the illustrious Maureen Vantrese.
Illustrious, I like that. Hi, Heidi.
Yes, and she is an amazing actor and voiceover artist and our presenter and host here on Salon Radio. And thank you for being here again for this show.
Thanks, Heidi. It's good to be back. It's been a while.
We're going to actually have the extra pleasure of talking a little later with you during our Salon Solo Radio spot about one of your current projects. And we're here with an amazing woman who has created a theater called Theater of Light, Ellen D. Stacy. Hi, Ellen.
Hi, welcome to me.
Yes, welcome to you and to all of our listeners, new and returning. And as those of you who have been with us for a while, we have we have a world bulletin which we produce every show. And so we're going to bring to you right now a few tidbits of what's happening for women creatives around the globe.
Hey there, Salonistas. It's time for the World Bulletin. Last week was National Arts and Education Week here in the United States. We give a salute and high five to all the amazing teachers of all art forms. The arts are an essential part of a complete education. Students of all ages benefit from artistic learning, innovative thinking, and creativity. This national celebration is designated to bring attention to this cause for elected officials and educational decision makers across the country, and to support equitable access to the arts for all students. Taking place annually during the week beginning with the second Sunday of September, save the date of September 9 to 15, 2018, for next year's celebration. Even if you don't have children in school, it is so very important to support your local school's arts programs. Vote for school boards, local elections to keep representatives at the local level supporting this crucial component of our communities. Find resources and ways to partner at AmericansForTheArts.org. Creative Time Summit of Homelands and Revolution is running September 28th to September 30th in Toronto. The Creative Time Summit is an annual convening for thinkers, dreamers, and doers working at the intersection of art and politics. This 10th Creative Time Summit of Homelands and Revolution is co-produced with The Power Plant in collaboration with the Art Gallery of Ontario. This exhibit explores the concept of home in its intimate and immense dimensions. We consider urgent struggles for sovereign homelands, the violent borders that produce exile, displacement, and refugeeism, and the threats of virulent nationalism. At the same time, we keep in sight home's relation to the heart and the everyday and extraordinary realms of domestic life and hospitality. Our consideration of revolution, the summit's second thematic axis, takes as its point of departure the centennial of the Russian Revolution. While the legacy of this historic moment can be contested, the Bolshevik Revolution was a remarkable event that, in the words of Trotsky, one of its principal architects, allowed for the direct interference of the masses in historic events. 100 years later, we look back at the Marxist tradition and at the many forms of radical sociality, aesthetics, and anti-capitalist organizing that it has inspired, particularly in light of the resurgence of neoliberalism and the global turn to the right today. For schedules and more about the summit, visit creativetime.org/summit/toronto-2017/. It will take place at Corner Hall, 273 Bloor Street West in Toronto. Way to go, London, for leading by example. Art Daily reports that last October, Sadiq Khan, the mayor of London, set up the Creative Land Trust, an initiative to create affordable studio spaces to ensure that London's arts professionals stay in the city. In collaboration with Studio Makers, a group of philanthropists and entrepreneurs, Khan was able to convince developers and landowners to create more workspaces for artists while keeping existing ones. London City Island is the result of this effort, a new cultural hub expected to entice all manner of artists and arts organizations for its affordability and sustainability. A number of institutions are planning a move to the island: the London Film School, the English National Ballet and National Ballet School, and The Line, East London's contemporary art walk. Arabite, an expanded media and performance arts space, will also be moving there and creating new studios. A report ordered by the mayor's office in 2014 estimated that 3,500 artist spaces in London would be lost by 2019 due to escalating real estate prices. It was in response to this report that Khan and studio makers united to find a solution. Together, they're working to make sure that London City Island has a cultural program that is indeed artist-led. Sean Mulryan, the chairman and chief executive of Ballymore Group, the development company behind London City Island, said, "It is my vision to make London City Island a home for art and creativity in the capital. This collaboration is particularly exciting as it will provide artistic talent with long-term and affordable opportunities for generations to come. The new creatives brought to the island through this partnership will integrate with our culturally rich mix of tenants and residents." And that wraps up the World Bulletin.
So as you can see and hear, there is incredible and amazing things that are happening around the world being produced and created by women artists of all different disciplines all over the world. So please do let us know if there's something interesting and engaging happening in your community by women creatives. Email us at womenartsalon@gmail.com. And I'm going to turn it right over to Maureen to talk with Ellen so we can hear all about Theater of Light.
Thanks, Heidi. Thank you. Ellen DeStacy is a graduate of Carnegie Mellon University Drama Department, and her ensuing career as a professional actress has led her to found Theater of Light. She's a professional stage and film performer, director, and a university professor. And she is excited now to bring Theater of Light to Manhattan. I understand you started out on Long Island, right, Ellen?
That is correct.
Yeah. And tell us what inspired you to start Theater of Light.
We have a lot of sound effects today. That's great.
We have a lot of sound effects today. We have drums and dings and all kinds of things going on.
It's great.
But
being
we
in
can
a new
probably
studio.
Cut that out because this is recorded.
Yes, but what is the fun of that?
So maybe we'll leave all that fun stuff in there. Ellen, tell us about Theater of Light. You started out on Long Island. How many years ago? When did you get all this started?
At least 20 years ago.
Wow.
And it has been an amazing journey. We started out doing equity productions of musicals and touring the communities with them and wanting to put our own special twist, which I'll talk about a little later, why I started the Theater of Light. I always did an overview for the audience, right, trying to give them some kind of the insight that I always found in theater that made it such an, I would call it a spiritual experience. And I wanted the audience to kind of get in on that subtext,
right,
as I call
yes.
it. And then as life unfolded and I had children, I was exposed to what's called cultural arts in schools.
Mm-hmm.
And on Long Island, their idea of cultural arts was balloon art and things like that.
Okay.
And I was like, no, this cannot be. And so I did some investigation and found an amazing program at Lincoln Center called Lincoln Center Institute that at that point had been in doing their wonderful work for some 25 years. I made sure I hooked my son's school to that program, but as it turned out, the Lincoln Center was interested in what I was doing, and when New York State mandated the arts and education, they were overwhelmed with the outcry, please, you know, we need more people, and they invited the Theater of Light to become an associate institute.
Oh, wonderful, yes.
And so that was great.
What kind of projects came out of that association with Lincoln Center?
Well, that really opened a door, because I learned how to use their amazing technique, which is you bring artists into the classroom, and it's experiential for the children. Mm-hmm. It's not sitting there lecturing them about artwork. You're actually having them experience what it's like to be a musician, an artist, a dancer. And it was very rewarding in that way. But it also, because of that wonderful name, gave me the confidence to go forward and say, well, there are other areas that we should be exploring. So with that confidence, I went to Disney on Broadway, who I felt was such an has such an impact on children's lives, and yet they had no cultural arts program at that time, nothing.
Right.
So the Theater of Light, they formed an alliance with us. We were the first program they joined forces with to bring their programs to schools and then bring students to their Broadway performances. And it was very rewarding on all sides and very exciting. And if you would like
and
to...
What was your function within that program? How did you...
I was the, I guess, artistic director. I also wrote I would hire teaching artists, we call them, mm-hmm. which are actors who, you know, like to work with children.
Yeah.
I wrote a program for them, a syllabus mm-hmm. that they would go into the classroom and present. Now, the first show we did actually with Disney on Broadway was Aida. And just literally days before we were to begin our unit of study, which I had written and everybody was ready to go, 9/11 happened.
Oh.
And changed our world and also changed my perspective of Aida and what it could mean to the students. Many of the students, as we know, Long Island is the bedroom of Manhattan. And sadly, many of the students had lost family members and parents.
Right.
And so this was a time of healing. And I really believe theater has that power. And I wanted to use this opportunity. So revamped everything that we had prepared and tried to use this as an opportunity to show students, if you know the story of Aida, when the Egyptians go in and destroy everybody who's weaker than they are and take over and destroy their culture. But at that point, the American response to this horrible disaster was much different, was much more forgiving, was much more seeking peace. And so to show and contrast that for the students mm-hmm. was a powerful, powerful experience, and for the teachers as well, which were another group that I knew I had to touch and reach. I would have special workshops that I ran myself for them because I knew they needed to be on board with whatever we did.
Right.
So we repeated this in at least a dozen schools, and then we would bring the students, not the entire student body, obviously, but we would bring, let's say, the 7th and 8th graders to see the Broadway production. But Disney allowed us to bring, I created for them an abbreviated program of whatever show we were doing, mm-hmm. and they would send their stars to the schools, and they would do an hour-long abbreviated version, storytelling version of Aida or whatever it is
wow.
that we were presenting. It was just fabulous for the kids.
That's always amazing, especially to bring children into an environment where they may not spend much time. There's not a lot of theater around you out in Long Island to go to. Your parents may not have the money to bring you into the city to see shows.
Absolutely. That reminds me, one of the young women who, when we did our units of study, I made sure that everybody participated. And one young girl had a disability in one side of her body, didn't function well. So immediately on the spot, we said, all right, today we're dancing with the left side, because I knew she could use that side. And she just had the best time. And I kind of followed up to make sure she was participating in all three of our workshops. The day of the show, she happened to be in the grade that was coming. And I saw her at intermission in tears. And I thought, oh dear, what is this? And I approached her, and she gave me my Tony Award, I will say, because she said, this is the most beautiful thing I have ever seen. And her helper, who was with her that day, explained to me that she was what we call the latchlock kid. You know, so she, because of her disability, because of her parents' poverty, I'm not sure all the combination, she never went anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Except school. And this was a whole new world to her.
World.
And it was just amazing, amazing.
Beautiful. That is a beautiful story. Tell me a bit about this self-esteem acting classes.
Oh, that was the fruit of the cultural arts program that we did with so many schools. It was clear to me when I had the students separated, the boys and the girls,
mm-hmm.
it would be a totally different experience for the girls. When the boys were around, they became shy. They became self-conscious. They were more interested in what the boys might think of them for doing this dance movement or whatever it is that we were having
them do.
Now,
were these like 12-year-olds, 13-year-olds?
We dealt with from 5 all the way up to 13.
Okay.
So, and it didn't matter.
Didn't matter what age.
All the ages. And I thought, this is not good. And of course, we're all very aware of all the eating disorders and other problems that our young women struggle with. So I thought it was time to utilize theater as a performance venue has such power, but also the exercises that we as actors, you're an actress too, you know, that we do, that open us up for the roles, also open you up and help you find that inner part of you. And I knew this could be fruitful for the young women. So I created summer workshops, and the town of Oyster Bay was thrilled, welcomed us to this library space, et cetera. And we had repeat offenders, mothers who were so thrilled for their daughters. They would sign up summer after summer. And we used this opportunity to give them that self-confidence that they needed. And also to explore through theater games, which was very safe, you know, that there are other choices and that you can be who you are and that it's cool to, you know, be smart and it's okay to be just the way you are. And it was wonderful. And it's ironic. The kids used to call me Mrs. Theater of Light because that's what kids do, right?
Yeah.
And last weekend, I was visiting with my youngest son who lives in Long Beach now, a really cool spot for your 20-somethings to live. And there was a young woman there on the beach. Hello, Mrs. Theater of Light. And she had been one of my lovely young girls who at a much tender age was a part of these workshops. And I was thrilled to see how she was so confident and interacting. And my son was praising, oh, she's so cool. And that wouldn't have been said if he had known her before. So I was, again, delighted.
How many years were you doing this program?
I would say Long Island in all about 20 years.
Yeah.
Because we had, as I said, we started with musicals, we moved on to school programs, and then women's self-esteem, young girls' self-esteem. And so and they would be happening sometimes simultaneously. It was just amazing. And as opportunities presented themselves, I tried to always bring it in to the students. We got to work with the Royal Shakespeare Company. I have a real love for Shakespeare, but I also feel there's a message in Shakespeare that it's much more than iambic pentameter, you know, and a lot. I always felt that my children were blessed, I think, because I introduced them very young. And I thought, we do it all backwards in America. So when I had the opportunity to meet with the Royal Shakespeare Company in Stratford, they shared with me that they start in kindergarten. And since I had access to kindergartners and principals who trusted me, we actually followed a program that they had set up and introduced a Shakespeare festival. But it wasn't bringing Shakespeare to kids. It was having them do Shakespeare.
Right.
At 5 years old. And again, the kids out of the mouths of babes, my favorite line was, Mrs. Theater of Light, before this I could speak two languages, English and Spanish. Now I can speak English, Spanish, and Old English.
And Old English.
Sweet.
So that is a whole different language, kind of. So now, your work now is taking you to the other end of the age spectrum.
Yes.
Okay, so you've been dealing with elderly people since now that you've moved into New York City. You have had your first inaugural season here this year in New York City. You've moved into the city from Long Island. Sorry, Long Island. I know you'll probably miss her. But we're glad to have her here in the city. And you have something called Three Plays, Three Virtues.
Yes.
Tell us about that project. What happens with that?
When the Theater of Light became a not-for-profit 501c3, we had a mission statement. And as we created it, we were going to service all different ages. And when I moved, courtesy of Hurricane Sandy, to Manhattan, I realized the one population that we had not yet reached out to were our seniors. So I did some investigation. And I would say our elderly poor are our forgotten population in the city. They have no political pull. They have, nobody can make money off them. There's no advantage. And so they were definitely the ones that I wanted to reach out to. And I approached it in a way of find out, you know, go and see. And I think what we came up with was just wonderful. Our first production this spring was Three Plays, Three Virtues, as you said. And what we did is we put out there that we needed new plays. And two amazing women playwrights gave me examples of their work. And what was wonderful about it was these plays had a mature character in them. Mm-hmm. So it was something that people could relate to. And the storyline it was in each of the plays had to deal with humor, had to deal with life, was entertaining, but touching. Mm-hmm. It was inspiring. We weren't dealing with death and dying and illness and the things that are too much a part of their life, but the things that in their life that could still give them hope and encouragement. And so I reached out to senior centers, which is where these aren't residences. I specifically wanted to reach out to the people who come for a free lunch, who come for companionship and friendship. And I did a test trial and contacted a half a dozen of them, and all six said, please come, please come. And that was an amazing experience because when we got there, it was like being with the kids again in some ways. They were noisy and disruptive, and sometimes I thought they were sleeping, you know. But then afterwards, we always did what we call in theater a talk back. And I was blown away because in through all of that confusion, they heard us. They were touched by it. Some of their responses just, it taught all of us as actors, like, oh my goodness, you should never judge a book by its cover. One gentleman in particular, who I think for sure must be a homeless gentleman, by the way he was dressed, and I was sure he had slept through the whole thing. He was so in tune that at the end of the show, when we did our talk back, he had imagined this character. I think that next she's going to go on and become an artist, and she'll be like Grandma Moses. I was floored, you know. So it was wonderful. And the thing was very touching. Each of them, all of the elderly people that we met with, you know, thanked us profusely for coming and said, please come back. So I knew then, we have to keep doing this. This is an absolute thing. So I'm reaching out now through these airwaves, please. Any playwrights who have plays that they would like to share with this very special population, something that they could relate to, identify with, that would be entertaining, inspiring, please contact me, Ellen, T of L, Ellen, at aim.com. That's my email. Our website is almost ready. And I would be delighted, you know, to read your work and perhaps produce it this fall, because that's our goal.
Yeah, so that's hopefully coming up for you. You're going to get some new plays, put together a whole new production to take around to the senior centers. Will you continue to work with the youth within Manhattan as well eventually? Or
I've been approached by a group where we did our performances, the Sheen Arts Center, and we're discussing that might happen. I'm very open to that. I would love to do that again. You know, whatever doors open, I'm going to follow.
That's what you have to do. Is there a female artist who inspired you to do what you do now?
It's hard to say. I have been so inspired by the women, you know, in the arts, the little known artists, you know, that work in high schools, to our famous Meryl Streep, you know, and all through the way, I've been encouraged that women can do anything, you know, that we can break barriers. I think we're very blessed, Maureen, to be in theater, because really, they, when my friends at Carnegie Mellon who were not in the theater program were really dealing with stereotypes and all of these things that women have to deal with,
yeah.
I didn't, because they couldn't hire somebody who wasn't a woman unless we go back to Shakespeare's time, you
right.
know, to do my part. So my employment was never in jeopardy. So for me, it was more of seeing how you could take your personal experience of theater and make it something profound for other people. And for me, that was an aha moment. I always experienced theater as a very spiritual experience. It was like going into the theater was like going into a church of worship, because I was opening myself up and being very touched so deeply by what was going on stage and the message of the playwright and every aspect of it. And I assumed everybody had that experience. So what a shock when I shared that repeatedly and people said, what? You know, what are you talking about? Yeah. And I thought, oh, this is too wonderful. You have to experience what I'm experiencing. So that's what started my mission to, I've got to share this gift that I didn't know, you know, everyone shared. On the other hand, when I first graduated from Carnegie Mellon, I was very fortunate to get offers for work and employment, but I also realized I was turning down work as mm-hmm. often as I was being given work, because I believe theater has a power to inspire people, change their lives, heal them, as well as entertain.
Right.
And some of the projects that were being done were not doing that at all, were really bringing people down and glorifying evil. And I'm like, why are we going to put all of this fabulous talent and energy together for a negative? And so I thought, there's got to be a better way to do it. And I said, I'll do it myself.
That's what a lot of us end up having to do, is you get out there and you self-produce mm-hmm. and you do your own projects, because there is a lot out there that you feel like, well, but it's work, but do I really want to be associated with that project?
Amen.
You know, you read the script and you think, ugh, this is horrible. No.
Right.
You know, so kudos to you. You're sticking to your guns. Staying with it. It's beautiful. I really hope that you'll let us come and see some of what you do eventually. We need to get that information up on our Facebook page.
Absolutely.
whenever you're doing something, please let us know so that we can put the word
so
out
much.
There and hopefully come and see what it is that you do.
Oh,
it
that
sounds
would be
fascinating.
I'd like to ask
so
a
much.
Little question. Yeah. Do you travel? Does your program travel to other communities or help other communities create something? Have you thought of
Well, we traveled all over Long Island, Nassau mm-hmm. and Suffolk County. We tried not to limit, you know, the schools mm-hmm. that we would, you know, help. And even when we did the musicals, we would go anywhere we were asked, way out on the island. At that point, I was still living in Manhattan, so it was quite of a commute. Since I've relocated here, we have not, because I find we always have to work under Actors mm-hmm. Equity. I'm a professional, and we always have to work under their contracts. So their contract limits me to Manhattan. But there is so much you think there is so much theater here, mm-hmm. but there is so much need here. Mm-hmm. And so I feel that at least for the time being, that we have plenty to do. Right in Manhattan.
Absolutely. But mm-hmm. you're providing a great inspiration and a model for our listeners out there in communities and small towns and other cities across the nation as well as the world to follow your model and example of using theater to engage with our youth as well as our elderly population, both that are in constant and dire need to be heard and appreciated and engaged.
Yes. Yes, please reach out to me. I'll share all my stories and my trials and tribulations so to help you spare you.
So tell us again your contact information. How can we find you?
At the moment, it's through my email, Ellen@aim.com.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Ellen, for coming in. It's wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
It's been a real pleasure speaking with you.
Absolutely. And I just have one last quick question. Is there a deadline to your call out, or do you take a...
Our goal is to produce this fall and again in the spring.
Okay, great.
So whenever you get me the material, and actors and actresses, I'll take headshots as well. We really want people who are excited by the work that we're doing. And I should say, because it's a showcase code that we work under, we do half of our performances as a free offering to these senior centers, and half of them we offer to the public. And we will continue to do that.
Fantastic. And that's how I met you, Ellen,
right,
and saw the Three Virtues productions. They're just incredible. And kudos again, as Maureen mentioned, from us at International Women Artists Salon for the great work that you do and the inspiration. And we do look forward to following your journey.
Thank you so you much for today. I really appreciate it, ladies, so much.
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks,
and
Ellen.
We will... take a little sponsor break, and we'll be back in just a moment. We are honoring our new facility, Funkadelic Studios, and they are a great partner and sponsor of International Women Artists Salon for several years now. And Dawn Orlando is the owner and amazing partner. They have many amazing activities, not just studios where people can come and produce and practice and rehearse, but they have several amazing activities where people can come open mic and things like that. So Funkadelic Studios runs on the simple philosophy of musicians are the priority. And they've provided musicians an affordable home to rehearse, record, and invent their music for over 20 years. Two musician friends in Brooklyn started the studio, as I mentioned, thanks to Dawn, and they provide a space where musicians can do what they do best, make music. And no matter how rich, poor, established, or underground an artist might be, Funkadelic provides all the services musicians need under one roof. The six R's are essential for any artist, and Funkadelic has them all covered. Rehearsal rooms, recording studio, repair shop, rentals, retail shop, and a rock and roll club. So thank you, Dawn, and to all her team, including our fabulous engineer, Jade Zabrick, who also works here at Funkadelic. And we wish them the best and get out to see what Funkadelic has to offer you. You don't have to be just a musician. You could be actors and all sorts who need rehearsal space and radio shows. Thank you for providing our new home to Funkadelic Studios.
Hey, Salonistas, it's time now for our Salon Bulletin of Happenings. First up, Salonista Flora Stein, currently working in Algeria, informs us of this exhibition being mounted in London, Pop Art from North Africa. The exhibition dates are September 22 through November 4th. It's at 21 Charlton Street in Northwest 1, London. Pop Art from North Africa will put together for the first time and under the P21 gallery roof the artworks of 15 creative individuals from North Africa who are all inspired by the pop art movement. Every country in the region is represented, including artists from Morocco, Algeria, Tunisia, Egypt, and Libya, as well as their diasporas living in Europe. The works tackle the social, political, and cultural environments unique to North Africa. Curators are Najla El Ajeli and Tufik Duib. Najla El Ajeli is originally from Libya and is a British architect. Due to a deep lifelong passion for the arts, in 2012, she co-founded Noon Arts, a small private foundation that aimed to spot, nurture, and support Libyan artists who were finally free from the former oppressive regime to be able to showcase and celebrate their talents. You can get more information at www.noonartsprojects.com. You can also visit the p21.gallery/exhibitions website as well. IWAS is a proud programmatic partner of Leela NYC Theater Festival, founded by Salonistas Kendra Augustin and Patricia Cardone. Leela is a theater festival based on normalizing diversity on stage. Leela means to play in Sanskrit, and that's what we do, play with plays. This year's festival is entitled Leela Tours the Burrows, Dixon Place, and it will be at Dixon Place on Saturday, September 23rd, from 7:30 to 8:15. Doors open at 6:45, so come early and visit the bartender for delicious cocktails. There is a $5 suggested donation for the festival. Plays include Two Portraits, written by Larry Wrinkle, directed by Bilal Walker, Don't Want Your Future to Melt, by Aaron Mohan, directed by Benjamin Abraham, We Remember, by Amy Ostriker, directed by Shima Clark, and Murder by the Sea, by Jenna Schlags, directed by Danielle Earle. Dixon Place is at 161A Christie Street between Rivington and Delancey. Congratulations to Salonista Melinda Lau, who's part of a team bringing an immersive sensory journey of live autonomous sensory meridian, ASM, called Whisper Lodge. That's going to be September 21 to September 24 in San Francisco. Intimately sized, six guides lead six guests through special one-on-one treatments designed to relax the body and mind, expand awareness, and heighten the senses. This particular Whisper Lodge is presented throughout a beautiful house in Berkeley and lasts for 90 minutes. After a year developing this experience in New York City, this is the California debut. Whisper Lodge's performance methodology is inspired by Autonomous Sensory Meridian Response, ASMR. ASMR is a sensory phenomenon where people feel pleasurable tingles from specific visual, oral, and haptic triggers. As one of the pioneers of live ASMR, Whisper Lodge translates this digital performance into a tangible physical experience. You can join their mailing list at whisperlodge.nyc. IWAS partner organization Theater Lab, founded and run by Salonista Orietta Crispino, invites us to celebrate with them their 12-year history of presenting innovative and international theater and performance art on stage. That will be on September 24th at their Eat Your Heart Out fundraiser celebration. They'll celebrate their past and pierce into the future with a celebratory evening of delicious food, wonderful artists, and a sneak peek at the upcoming fall season, Eat Your Heart Out, which celebrates the ephemeral cycle of performance that echoes itself with each iteration and feeds us something different each time. After all, you can't eat the same apple twice, says Orietta. For a ticket to the event, donate $25 or more. It will take place at 357 West 36th Street, Floor 3, here in New York. In Boston, Salonista Nora Valdez and eight other women come together creating nine installations in Close to Home. Artists include Susan Allport, Roya Amig, Fran Bull, Louise Farrell, Heather Park Hanlon, Kirsten Lamb, Mary Ellen Latas, Emily Lamakis, and Nora Valdez. It is curated by Elizabeth Michaelman and runs through the 14th of January. This exhibit is described as an ache, not a place. It's a hope of returning, a refuge where we long to dwell or dwell to dream. It's the residue of a life wrested from us, one that we never lived but might have lived, or the best we can do with what we have. Speaking through multi-generational and multicultural perspectives, nine women artists passing through or living in New England probe experiences of intimacy and vulnerability embedded in fantasies, memories, and social constructs of home. Widely ranging in their use of materials, artistic ideologies, and metaphors, the artists explore the fluid boundaries of self, home, and family. A female presence and sensibility makes itself known through installations of objects, sculptures, videos, photographs, drawings, and paintings. That is going to be at the Art Complex Museum, 189 Alden Street, Duxbury, Massachusetts. For more information, you can go to www.artcomplex.org. And that will conclude our Salon Bulletin.
We are presenting another amazing artist, Salonista, and fabulous International Women Artists Salon team member, Maureen Van Treese. Hi, Maureen.
Hi, Heidi.
So you've had the dual pleasure of being a presenter as well as a guest tonight, and it's great to have you on the show to talk about one of your current projects.
Thank you, yeah.
But I'd like to mention and remind our listeners that a little bit about Maureen. Maureen is an award-winning actor, playwright, producer, and a voice talent artist. So, and I think also a seamstress.
Yeah, seamstress too.
Yes,
yeah,
so you are an all-around
theater person, really. You know, yes. You get that undergraduate theater degree and you know lighting and set design and costume making and, you know, the whole thing. It's like,
yes,
my dad has a barn, let's put on a show kind of thing.
Fantastic. So is that how you found your creative voice originally?
Well, originally I found my creative voice playing Betsy Ross in fifth grade. Now, this was 1976. So we were on our 200th anniversary. So we did this play, and I remember Betsy Buck, who was the tallest girl in the class, played George Washington.
Oh, right.
And I was Betsy Ross.
Reverse Shakespearean.
Kind of, yes. Yes, it was. And so that's what got me started. And then I was doing some in high school, although my high school didn't really have a theater program. We did a couple of musicals a year, but I didn't sing then because I'd been rejected for the eighth grade choir.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I was really nervous, and I had a bad audition, and she wasn't very kind. Oh. So I only sang with my hairbrush in the bedroom for many, many years after that. Anyway.
And you've broken out with that.
But I have.
Yes.
And, yeah. So then as a senior in high school, I was working in the gifted program there, and my English teacher, who was also running the gifted program, wanted us to do a play. And so I really got bitten by the theater bug. Then I played grandmother in Edward Albee's The Sandbox, which was, I don't know, I think kind of an odd thing for her to choose for high school students to do. It was, there's so much depth to that, and it deals a lot with the elderly, actually. And sort of grandma becoming sort of invisible, really. And that's what kind of got the bug bitten in me, and I just started doing some in my first 2 years of college that were in Louisiana. I got to play Beauty in Sleeping Beauty.
Ooh,
oh, yeah. And we did Spoon River Anthology, and then when I went back, I decided, okay, I'm not going to study nursing anymore, which is what I had been doing, and I decided I was going to study theater. So I was going to school in Harton Simmons University in Abilene, Texas, because they had a decent theater program, and doing all kinds of wonderful things there. I played Blanche in Streetcar Named Desire.
Fantastic.
So, you know, hey, maybe that will come up again someday, because yes, now I'm actually probably the right age.
Wow, what roles?
But yeah, so I had a chance to play some really wonderful, wonderful roles. I played Lucky in Waiting for Godot, and then embarked on a professional career after I left college, and that was down in St. Pete, Florida, working with Kestrel Theater, working with Stageworks, working with Tampa Players. I was blessed enough to get to play Squeaky Fromm in Assassins. So yes, I did go back into the world of music and singing. I worked a lot with Tampa Bay Opera. So I got involved there because I decided, okay, you know what? I'm not going to let them stop me from singing. I'm not going to let that voice in my head stop me. So I went back and I started taking singing lessons and doing musicals. Ended up going eventually to Mount View Conservatory for the Performing Arts in London in their musical theater program.
Wow, fantastic.
So, you know, tried very hard to become a hoofer. I would not say dance is my main thing, but definitely acting and singing, and then eventually moved on up here to New York to see what it had to offer, and realized very quickly how difficult it is to get work up here, and started creating my own projects, and one of them had to do with Dorothy Parker. I happened to pick up the portable Dorothy Parker, and I started reading it. I love Dorothy Parker. She really speaks to my soul. I love what she writes because her stories are so funny. So I started delving a little more into her life, which was very up and down and quite tragic at times too. So that kind of led me to put a piece together called Those Whistling Lads, the Poetry and Short Stories of Dorothy Parker. So I took five of her short stories and five of her poems, put them together for the stage, and I interwove that with scenes from her life and those other people in her life that inspired her to write what she did write. So you're going to find the play has so many ups and downs because her life was, in a way, a bit tragic, but out of that came amazing comedy. And really touches on the relationship between men and women. So originally the idea was to take the piece and tour it to universities. And I'm still up for that. Anybody who's listening, if you would like us to come and do a staged reading, get in touch with me. And I'll give you the contact information when we finish up here. But I really think it has a lot to say about feminism and women's issues. Dorothy said of herself, she says, "I'm a feminist, and I have been from my very early days when New York was scarcely safe from buffaloes." So she has always been a feminist. So I put together this play. It was first written in 2007, and originally it had 9 actors in it, and that's a little much for touring. So now it's cut down to 4 actors, of course, a stage manager, and it would be an equity tour, I hope, fingers crossed, that this is going to come into fruition. But what I've started doing with it now, because it's been in mothballs for a while, Kevin Fitzpatrick, who runs the Dorothy Parker Society, asked me if I would come out and do some of the pieces. Because we had a production in 2009. We were up for awards. That was with Planet Connections Theater Festivity, which is still going, still running strong. And that was an amazing experience to be able to put it on stage, to go through the whole process of writing it and being in it and putting on the different hats and trying to differentiate between, okay, now I'm playing producer, now I'm playing actor, and now I'm being the playwright. So that was an amazing experience to do that. So Kevin asked me to come out to Governor's Island, and we just did that last month. And we did, I did a couple of her monologues that come from the play, and 3 of the pieces that come from it. We did one piece called You Were Perfectly Fine, which is about a gentleman who gets really drunk and he has no idea what he did. And so the girl that he was out with, she starts telling him, "Oh, no, you were fine," but he did all of these horrible things. And then she tells him that he proposed to her in the taxi cab. He doesn't remember this. And he's just like, "Oh, God, what have I done?" Because he, of course, did not mean to propose to her, but now he's sort of stuck. So these are the kinds of funny stories that Dorothy writes that I really wanted to bring out. And her poems, the reason I love her poems so much is that they all have a little twist at the end. Like the last line or two is just this little twist, this little dig, you know. And that's what I really love about her work. So Kevin has hooked me up with Balm and Bullfrog, which is a marketing company. And they are doing an event in August, it's about mid-August, at a very swanky restaurant bar in Columbus Circle. I can't reveal that yet because it's an invitation-only thing, so there's really no point in putting it out there.
We'll be cheering on.
But they have asked me to come and do some of Dorothy Parker's poetry and to just interact with the audience as Dorothy. And it's exciting. And so it's sort of given me the impetus to get the whole thing out of the mothballs and get it moving again to where I really want it to go,
which is great.
On tour.
That's great. Congratulations on that. So there's quite a few tidbits of advice in there for our listeners out there who might be creatives and wanting to put their own work or produce. Is there a tip that, you know, just sort of resonates throughout this whole process that you could share as inspiration and motivation?
Really to find people to work with that inspire you, that you feel you can work with. You know, there's all sorts of toxic people out there that might want to be involved with you for other reasons, not to be creative, and to just find those people that you connect with, that you can do projects with. Like now I sort of have an inner circle now of women that I work with a lot because I trust them and we have a great working relationship together as far as bringing them in as directors, as other actors. And I think you have to really find your circle of people. You have to find your people.
That's great advice. Thank you, Maureen. And speaking of inspiration, you mentioned several women that you've either played their personas or characters, and now Dorothy Parker, who you've researched and written about and sharing her work through your eyes and your voice. Are there other women?
Well,
that have inspired
yes,
you?
There actually there are, and one of them is hopefully going to show up in a play that's been brewing in my head for some time, and that's Simone de Beauvoir.
Fantastic.
So she was an existentialist, a feminist. Her writings, I just adore her writings and the way she thinks. And I really want to bring her to the stage too. So that's been brewing for a little while. And I think if I just keep talking about it, eventually it'll come out and I'll put it on the page. So that's an exciting thing that's hopefully coming up very soon.
That's awesome. And what are some good ways for people to connect with you and to follow your work?
Well, I'm in the process of putting the website back together because it really needed to be revamped. But at the moment, I have a page on Facebook, maureenvantrease.com. That's maureenvantrease, maureenvantrease.com. That's my acting Facebook page. And Maureen Vantrease, I have my regular Facebook page. So sometimes I've got some political things up there and sometimes some funny things and sometimes, you know, things about projects that I'm working on.
Fantastic. And I think you might have something to share with us.
I do. I want to share with you a little bit of Dorothy.
Take it away.
For an unknown lady. Lady, if you'd slumber sound, keep your eyes upon the ground. If you'd toss and turn at night, slip your glances left and right. Would the morning find you gay? Never give your heart away. Would they find you pale and sad? Fling it to a whistling lad. Ah, but when his pleadings burn, will you let my words return? Will you lock your pretty lips and deny your fingertips? Veil away your tender eyes just because some words were wise. If he whistles low and clear when the insistent moon is near and the secret stars are known, will your heart be still your own just because some words were true? Lady, I was told them too.
Brilliance, brilliance, brilliance.
And
I love the tone and the...
The tone. And that really is Dorothy's voice. I was blessed enough to know that Kevin Fitzpatrick, and he actually clued me in to some recordings of her reading her poetry. So I kind of was able to kind of bring that voice out a little bit. And I remember somebody reviewing the show one time saying that she sounded British. And it's like, well, it's not really British. It's old New York money.
Wow, interesting.
And that's kind of where she came from, even though, you know, she didn't have that all of her life.
Yeah.
But there's just two more pieces.
Okay.
This first one is called General Review of the Sex Situation. Woman wants monogamy. Man delights in novelty. Love is woman's moon and sun. Man has other forms of fun. Woman lives but in her lord. Count to 10, and man is bored. With this, the gist and sum of it, what earthly good can come of it? And the next piece is called Unfortunate Coincidence. By the time you swear you're his, shivering and sighing, and he vows his passion is infinite, undying, lady, make a note of this. One of you is lying. That's one of my favorites.
Fantastic. Yes, I can tell that. Speaking of messaging, is there something that you would like our listeners to know about Dorothy that maybe they might not get
from the poetry?
From the poetry or her writings.
From her writings. Well, she spent a lot of time at the Algonquin Hotel. She was a member of the Algonquin Roundtable with Frank Crowninshield, Robert Benchley, Alexander Wolcott, Harold Ross. She worked at Vogue writing captions for pictures. She was a theater critic at Vanity Fair, where she was fired for writing a scathing review about Condé Nast's Paramore. She did grow up with money, but then when her father died, she realized there was nothing left but debt. So she moved into a boarding house and tried to teach piano lessons and play piano for ballet classes. So she was very lucky in that she was able to write the way that she did. She married Edwin Pond Parker. She was born a Rothschild, Dorothy Rothschild. So that's how she got the name Dorothy Parker. She divorced him. He had a heroin addiction and a drinking problem. She had an affair with Charles MacArthur, who eventually married Helen Hayes. But Charles, he got her pregnant, and he gave her $20 to get rid of it, which she then went and did. And she ended up working at the New Yorker for Harold Ross, and she did book reviews for him for many, many years. Constant Reader was her column with the New Yorker. She married Alan Campbell eventually, and they went to Hollywood to write screenplays. And she won an Oscar for A Star is Born, for being one of the writers of A Star is Born.
Wow.
And she had quite an illustrious career. Volumes of short stories and poetry. She never did actually write a novel much as she wanted to. She said she was a short distance writer.
Well, a fabulous one at that. And thank you for bringing her to light to our listeners today and also in the future who are listening to this podcast. So thank you to Maureen Ventrese for
being with
us today and sharing about your creative inspirations and your Dorothy Parker project. And we look forward to following along with that. And please do keep us posted, and we will share everything on our social media.
Thanks, Heidi. I will.
And we look forward to having you back on Salon Radio as a host and presenter. And thank you to our guest today, Ellen DeStacy, pronounce that right, of Theater of Light, and for her great work. And we look forward to following that. And just a reminder that she has a call out for short plays and two or so characters with a mature character, as well as themes that would relate to our elderly population. So please do send that out to her. And if you need to connect through International Women Artists Salon, we'll get you connected with her.
Right. As well as actors and directors,
oh,
too.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you for that reminder. And thank you to Jade, our fabulous engineer, and again to Funkadelic Studios for this amazing partnership with our new studio for our podcast. Did I miss anything? Did I forget anything?
I don't think so.
Just reach out to us, everybody out there, if you'd like to join us, partner with us, sponsor us in any way, any kind. Doesn't have to be money, time, just giving us shout outs, etc. But we love to connect women creatives around the world, all stages of career, all generations, all disciplines. Please do reach out to us through any of our social media, or email us at womenartsalon@gmail.com. And please do get out to see some women's artistry this week. Take care and see you next week.